Holmes in his presentation. Our next speaker is Dr. Cliff Lamb from the University of Florida, a graduate of Middle Tennessee State. In 1992, he received his master's and doctorate degrees at Kansas State University. In 1998, he became the Bee Specialist Assistant Professor at the University of Minnesota and was promoted to Associate Professor in 2003 and served in that capacity until moving to the University of Florida in 2008. His primary research efforts focused on applied reproductive physiology in beef cattle, emphasizing efficient reproductive management systems for replacement heifers and postpartum cows. Dr. Lamb also coordinates the beef research facilities at the University of Florida, North Florida Research and Education Center in Marianna, Florida. Cliff, I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks a lot. Yep. Can you hear me back there? Good. All right. Thanks again, Don. You know, when Jim was talking earlier, it strikes me as quite amazing that if my mother was a cow, she wouldn't like that, I'm sure, but if she was and would try to synchronize her to conceive me 40 years ago, we would not have had any of the products that we use to synchronize cows today. So we've made some major advancements in reproductive management of cattle, and to see where we are today, we've also eliminated the opportunity, as Dave mentioned, eliminated the opportunity for heat detection with very, very good success. So to me, that's really amazing. As many of you know, I am originally from Zimbabwe, Africa. I always show a couple of slides. And when I first moved to this country, I went to Middle Tennessee State, as Don mentioned. And when I went to get my Social Security card, they asked me where I was from. And I said, from Zimbabwe. And they go, where's that at? And I said, well, that's East Tennessee. And since that point, I've always been a legal resident of the United States until I got a call from the Social Security office about 4 years ago. So anyway, I always show a couple of slides from Zimbabwe because I'm not the greatest proponent, ambassador to Zimbabwe anymore, since our farm was taken away about 10 years ago. So one of the slides that I have. Notice public bar. Our public bar is presently not open because it is closed, manager. So this basically is just going to put into perspective that we might have some issues in this country, but we might not have the same issues that we have overseas. Here is a receipt that one of my family members went to a restaurant, and they purchased two beers, one mineral water, and one dinner, and the total bill was $1.2 billion. Now, to put that into perspective, one Zimbabwe dollar and one U.S. dollar were equivalent in 1973. They were worth exactly the same amount. Now, take a look at this. That is worth 52 U.S. dollars. It was $1.2 billion. When I was growing up, to be a millionaire was great. We thought it would be fantastic to be a millionaire. Take a look at this little kid here with all these $200,000 notes. So anyway, this is a public restroom, toilet paper only, no cardboard, no cloth, no Zimbabwe dollars. And that's no lie, because the paper, toilet paper is actually worth more than a Zimbabwe dollar is. So. All right. So anyway, my goal today is basically going to be to try and sort of paint a picture of where we've come, where we were, and where we are now. And as everybody has mentioned, as the day has gone on, is we really had no nomenclature, or any way of defining protocols. And I think it became very confusing for producers, and I know it was very confusing for us. And so the development of the Reproductive Task Force, at least I think, has narrowed that down a little bit. And so our goal here, and certainly my goal today, is to go ahead and sort of lead you down a path that will maybe just give you a couple of choices rather than giving you 15 different choices of extra synchronization protocols for cows. But just very quickly here, and I put this these slides together for a presentation last year in July, and I just wanted to show that I think we have some tremendous changes that have been very positive in the United States over the last few years in terms of artificial insemination. And this slide demonstrates the number of units of beef semen that have been sold by major companies, plus the semen that has been collected by our custom collection units. And the yellow bars would be the units of semen sold, and then the pink and orange bars are those units that have been custom collected. Now, that doesn't mean to say that every unit of semen that is actually purchased or collected in custom by custom collection semen companies, that does not mean to say that that all goes into cows. But the trend, obviously, is that there is more semen available now in the last few years that go that could potentially go into cows than ever before. And that seems to, that certainly has been a trend. And the other thing is that we're seeing our lowest cow numbers ever. And when you put this into perspective, the total semen that we have available to go into cows now exceeds 11%. It's as high as 14% in the last few years. You take a look at this, and most of the classical work over the last 10 to 15 years, people are talking about 5 to 8% of females are artificially inseminated. Well, we're probably a lot higher than that now than what we have been in the past. And a lot of that has very likely come because of the development of these time-derived protocols that we have today. So what I'm going to do, like I said, is I'm going to lead you down a path to get you to these protocol sheets. I'm not going to talk about the protocol sheets because I know Sandy Johnson will be talking about them later. But my goal is to show you how we got to these so it gives you some comfort and ease in using the protocols to understand that, you know, there is some data behind them. Before I start talking about those, some of the definitions that I think we need to understand, and Jim Lauderdale talked about these earlier, but understand that when I talk about synchronization rate, this is the percentage of females that are detected in estrus compared to all of the females that are synchronized. So if you have 100 females, and you synchronize them, you synchronize 100 females, you detect 75 of those females in heat, your synchronization rate is going to be 75%. Conception rate, then, is the percentage of females that become pregnant compared to the number of females inseminated. So let's say we inseminated those 75 females and we get 50 of them pregnant. It's 50 divided by 75. Your conception rate would be about 67% in that example. But the conception rate is really arbitrary. Pregnancy rate is probably a far better indication of the success of your program. And pregnancy rate is the percentage of females pregnant compared to the total number of females synchronized. Remember, we synchronize 100 females, not just 75 that we detected in heat. So take the number of females that we got pregnant, let's say 50, divided by 100 cows, and our pregnancy rate is 50%. And so very often we get confused between conception rate and pregnancy rate, but pregnancy rate is probably a far better evaluation of your reproductive management or your synchronization program at home. And when you utilize, when you're trying to detect, figure out in your own operation how successful you were, take a look at pregnancy rate and not conception rate. That's probably a far fairer evaluation. So years ago in the early 70s, the two-injection of prostaglandin system was used, basically giving an injection of prostaglandin 11 to 14 days before a second injection of prostaglandin, and then heat detect for a period of time, anywhere for up to 5 or 6 days, and using the AMPM rule. The drawback of this system, though, obviously, is the fact that prostaglandin only works in females that are cycling, that have to have, so they have to have a corpus luteum. So this system really has lost a little bit of favor in terms of overall pregnancy rates compared to some of the newer systems. And then the development of the SelectSync protocol basically entails an injection of GnRH followed by an injection of prostaglandin 7 days later, and then heat detection and artificial insemination, again, for about 5 to 6 days. The one drawback of this system is the fact that we also might have anywhere from about 5 to 15 and sometimes 20% of the cows might show heat before that prostaglandin injection. So if you're utilizing that system, understand that those cows might come into heat. There might be a portion of cows that come into heat before the prostaglandin injection. Be aware of that and detect heat for those 2 or 3 days before prostaglandin. Well, the development of ArcSync in the dairy industry has probably been more beneficial for us in the beef industry than any other system, because this has allowed us to start developing our protocols in the beef world. And basically, the ArcSync entails an injection of GnRH followed by an injection of prostaglandin 7 days later. And then an injection of GnRH 48 hours after that, followed by timed artificial insemination about 16 hours later. And so that's a great system. It's worked exceptionally well in the dairy operations. But the drawback for us in beef cattle operations is these four handlings, especially these handlings from prostaglandin to AI. That's three times you have to run the cows through the chute in a very short period of time. And so that's led to the work that has been done using the co-sync system, basically giving an injection of GnRH, 7 days later prostaglandin, and then 48 hours giving an injection of GnRH at the same time you artificially inseminate cows. Again, though, the drawback of this system, just like the SelectSync when we heat detect, is that there are a portion of cows that come into heat before that prostaglandin injection. So be aware of that if you're utilizing the system. Heat detect before the prostaglandin injection, and you could actually increase your overall fertility if you utilize the system. And then a hybrid of basically a timed AI protocol and a heat detection protocol is essentially giving GnRH 7 days before a prostaglandin injection, heat detect and time AI for anywhere from about 72 to 84 hours, and then give it GnRH and AI, any of those females you did not detect in heat, artificially inseminate those heat at 72 to 84 hours. So, again, understand then that some of these cows might come into heat before that prostaglandin injection. So let me start going over some data then. So which of these systems might be better? And let's first compare the two injection of prostaglandin system, basically prostaglandin 11 to 14 days apart, compared that to the SelectSync where GnRH is followed by prostaglandin 7 days later, and heat detection in both of those systems. In this experiment, take a look at overall pregnancy rates here. And remember what pregnancy rates are. They're the best measure we have for evaluating these systems. 28% pregnancy rates in the two injection of prostaglandin system, 38% in the SelectSync system. Now, conception rates, what we often look at, and we often say, boy, we were fine, we got 60 to 65%. That's exactly right here. But the reason we have such low overall pregnancy rates is our heat detection was fairly poor in those systems. So in cycling cows, this is not unusual. Then when we compare the SelectSync against the CoSync system, so basically a heat detection system against a timed AI system, when we compare those systems here, SelectSync, the heat detection system, overall pregnancy rates are 39%. CoSync, we've removed any heat detection whatsoever, ended up with 48% pregnancy rates in that group of cows. So, and not only did we eliminate heat detection, we also increased pregnancy rates. So that's quite a tremendous advantage there. Now then, a lot of people asked when these systems first came out is, well, what if we just use the CoSync system versus the OffSync system? The CoSync would be an injection of GnRH and time AI at the same time versus OffSync where we run the cattle through the chute about 16 hours after that first, after that second injection of GnRH. And when you take a look at the overall pregnancy rates, and this is work that Tom Gary did in Colorado, no difference in pregnancy rates in these two groups of cows. And there were significant numbers of cows, about 2,000 cows in this experiment. And you notice no difference. So it's almost a no-brainer. I mean, why not just run the cows through the chute at the same time? You give GnRH time artificially inseminate the cows and don't worry about running them through the next day. So then that led to us deciding the CETA became approved in this country, and we started putting that into protocols. And one of our problems, if you recall, is that in the CoSync system and any of these systems where we give GnRH followed by prostaglandin, we have the problem with cows coming into heat here just before the prostaglandin injection. And so to overcome that, what we did is we put a CETA in between the GnRH injection and the prostaglandin injection. And what our thoughts were in that case was at least we'll prevent cows from coming into heat there. The other advantage of a CETA is the fact that the CETA kick-starts non-cycling cows to start cycling. It does so far better than either GnRH, and prostaglandin obviously doesn't do that. But the CETA would kick-start those cows to start cycling. And then in this group of studies, we time AI'd those cows at 48 hours after prostaglandin removal. And when you look at pregnancy rates, overall pregnancy rates, when we added the CETA in, we increased pregnancy rates by about 11%. compared to what pregnancy rates were before. So that's an 11% increase in pregnancy rates just by putting that cedar in was good. And we thought certainly that we'd probably increase our pregnancy rates by moving those cows that might have come into heat before the prostaglandin injection. We thought that those are the cows we caught. But we also know, after analyzing all the blood samples, that it was also the non-cycling cows that we actually kick-started. And essentially, the cows that are very close to start cycling, they're anestrous, they're regarded as anestrous, but they're coming, they're almost ready to start cycling. Those are the cows that actually respond best to these synchronization protocols, because it gets them over the edge, it kick-starts those cows. And this slide would sort of validate that, as those cows that are in better condition approaching the breeding season, that's where we saw our biggest advantage of adding the cedar. So it seems to have kick-started those non-cycling cows, and our pregnancy rates were greater when we used the cedar in the better conditioned cows. And any of those cows that were really thin, our pregnancy rates were poor in those cows regardless. The cedar didn't even help. So if they're in deep anestrus, your cows are in really poor shape, the opportunity for even the cedar to help you overcome anestrus, it just doesn't seem to be doing that. Okay. That led to a fairly large study that we did in 2003, there were several collaborators in 14 different herds across the country. And our goal then is to see if we could synchronize cows using timed artificial insemination and get comparable fertility to those cows that were synchronized with a heat detection system. The other thing is, our goal was that we only wanted to handle the animals three times. So in three handlings, we had to synchronize the cows and artificially inseminate them, and that every cow had to be inseminated in a period of time. And so that's what you'll see from these five protocols here. You'll notice the top protocol here is very close to the FDA-approved protocol, except that prostaglandin was injected at the time of cedar removal. And here we have the two timed AI protocols. No heat detection in these two protocols. The co-sync without the cedar, and then the co-sync with the cedar, and then two hybrid systems down here with GnRH up front, heat detection after prostaglandin and timed AI to those animals that were not detected in heat by 84 hours. The only difference here is that these cows got the cedar compared to the cows in the fourth group there that did not get a cedar. When you look at the overall pregnancy rates among the 14 different operations, this is what we'll see. And if all of us in this room went out and we synchronized cows exactly the same way, and we came back here next year and we reported our pregnancy rates, this is exactly what you would see. So very often we throw out these average numbers. But again, it probably comes down to realistic expectations and how all of the other factors that you're going to hear about over the next couple of days. But certainly in a herd here where you have excellent pregnancy rates, 67% pregnancy rates. When we went back and analyzed that herd, 99% of the cows were cycling. They were in very good condition. They were improving. Their nutrition was improving, approaching the breeding season. Everything went well for that herd. It was very easy to explain. Most of all, we're sort of averaging somewhere in the in this study anyway, averaging in the mid to high 50s. And then obviously some poor pregnancy rates down here. And again, like I said, unrealistic expectations might have caused some disappointments down here. And I'll just quickly talk about this one herd. This one herd with 42% pregnancy rates. This is a herd that thought that they should have done better, but after we analyzed all the blood samples, they had only about 25% of those cows were cycling by the start of the breeding season. We ended up getting 42% of those of all the cows pregnant, so we got more cows pregnant than what were actually cycling. So after explaining this to them, they weren't that disappointed, but it was unrealistic expectations is why they were disappointed initially. So when we look at the overall pregnancy rates among these five treatments that I showed you there, the second and third treatments here, those are the two timed AI treatments, the co-sync and the co-sync plus cedar. And then the system here, the SelectSync plus cedar and timed AI, gave us obviously the numerically the best pregnancy rates here, but statistically no difference in pregnancy rates from those cows that were timed AI'd. So in this system here, we had a timed AI, we had heat detection for 3 days, and then we time AI'd anything we did not detect in heat and got 58% pregnancy rates. In this system here, at 60 hours, we time AI'd all of the cows without any heat detection whatsoever and ended up with the same pregnancy rates. To me, the other important take-home message here is you notice this 10% in white. That 10%, those are the pregnancies that were as a result of the time AI to those cows that did not respond. So if you decide you want to just heat detect and you do not want to use a cleanup time AI at 72 to 84 hours, you're going to lose around 10 and maybe as high as 12 to 14% of pregnancies. And if you just decide you want to heat detect with heat detect and not worry about the cows that don't come into heat, the pregnancy rates in that herd would have been 48%, and that is less than a time AI protocol where we just go ahead and time AI all the cows without any heat detection. So I think I think that really brings into perspective that time AI or heat detection followed by cleanup time AI are far better than a heat detection protocol alone. We'll get more cows pregnant out of every 100 cows that we synchronize using a time AI or a cleanup time AI on non-responding cows. But, you might have heard, you might have read most recently about the 5-day co-sync plus CEDA protocol, which has come out of Mike Day's lab in Ohio. And essentially, the 5-day co-sync CEDA protocol starts with an injection of GnRH and CEDA insertion. And then 5 days later, remove the CEDA, give an injection of prostaglandin. And then about 8 hours later, give a second injection of prostaglandin. And then 72 hours after you remove the CEDA, after the first injection of prostaglandin, you time it, you run all the cows through the chute, time AI, and give an injection of GnRH. Okay, it's a little bit more cumbersome than the 7-day system because in the 7-day system, we give this injection, we don't give the second injection of prostaglandin, but the second injection of prostaglandin is essential in the 5-day system. What many people ask then is, well, which is better, the 7-day or the 5-day system? And I think the jury is still out right now, which one is better, but there are some disadvantages between the 7 and the 5-day and why one might be better than the other, why one might have better pregnancy rates. So let me just explain one of the places in the 7-day system that we might have a little bit of a reduction in fertility. And that would be, here's the 7-day co-sync CEDA system right here. One of our drawbacks with this system, and we don't have the advantage like the dairy industry does of pre-synchronizing cows and giving them hundreds of shots. What we do is here is we can have, in any population of cows, we might have cows that ovulate within the first 3 to 5 days, within 3 to 5 days before we run those cows through the chute and put the CEDA in those cows. And the drawback of that is that those cows don't get an opportunity to respond to GnRH. So what happens is the follicle or the new follicular wave that starts back here rather than somewhere right after GnRH, what happens is that follicle starts to grow. And what we're starting to see is through some ultrasound work that we're doing is that we're actually creating some persistent follicles. Very similar to what we would have done with the 14-day, putting heifers on MGA for 14 days, that infertile heat at the end. Essentially, this is doing the same thing here, but not to a very high population of cows. And we still get excellent pregnancy rates, but that might be the one reason that the 5-day system might be slightly better than the 7-day system. On the other hand, in the 5-day system, we don't have the drawback of these cows that might ovulate before the GnRH injection because they're only exposed to progesterone to the CEDA for 5 days, so those follicles don't seem to be as aged. However, the problem we have with the 5-day system is the fact that we have, and if you go back to your reproductive physiology class or your AI class, they tell you don't. If you give prostaglandin to a cow before day 6 or 7 after she comes into heat, she won't respond to prostaglandin. And why is that? That's because she has a very young, underdeveloped corpus luteum, so they don't respond to prostaglandin that well. Well, when we do that, when we give GnRH right here, that's essentially telling the cow she's in heat, and so she has a very young corpus luteum here, and so we need to give an injection of prostaglandin. But in some cases, it doesn't totally eliminate the corpus luteum, and so you really got to knock it out by giving a second injection of prostaglandin about 8 hours later. We're still testing several things, and we have a large study going on this spring. About eight different investigators are looking at different variations of how these prostaglandin injections might be able to make things a little bit more simple for us. But nonetheless, the five-day dosing system does work, and it works works very well. So in terms of timed artificial insemination, I have two systems here that are used extensively. The seven-day dosing feeder system, still by far the most utilized system in cows. You only handle the animal three times, and it works extremely well. The five-day system, we're getting a lot of producers to use it, and I'll show you some data here in a couple of minutes. And my first concern when we first put this onto the protocol sheets last year was that people just wouldn't run those cows through the chutes twice in one day. A lot of herds that I'm working with in the upper Midwest anyway, they actually haven't been that concerned about that. They'll run the cows through the chute in the morning, pull the cedar, give prostaglandin, and then come back after lunch, run the cows through the chute again, and give prostaglandin again, and they don't have to separate calves twice. They just leave the calves and cows separated. So it wasn't as complicated as I thought it might be, and people have actually embraced it a little bit better than I thought they might. So, but you might ask, let me just show you, the one important thing here is the time AI for the seven-day system should be probably closer to 66 hours is probably more desirable. In the time AI for the five-day system should be at least 72 hours, and 72 hours is what we recommend. And so that's important to take note of, is that difference. And you might ask why. This is some work out of Dave Patterson's lab here, having a look at some heat watch data. And this is the interval for when cows come into heat. On the seven-day system, you'll notice the yellow bars here. Those cows come into heat just a little bit sooner, somewhere around 6 hours earlier than those cows on the five-day system. Notice they'll come into heat. The peak is a little bit later than those cows on the seven-day system. So it's important to understand when you're time AIing with the five-day system at 72 hours, when you're time AIing with the seven-day system closer to 66 hours. So let me just give you some, this is field data that we have, and this is cedar work. Overall in 7,000 cows, Dave just sent this to me the other day, they're seeing about 62% pregnancy rates in about 7,000 cows. If you take a look, I just happened to glance at Sandy Johnson's proceedings. She has about 10,000 observations there, and she sees about 58%. Same with us. We have a bunch of field data right now that we're busy going through right at this point, and we're seeing about 58% pregnancy rates on the seven-day protocol, which is very, very good. On the five-day protocols, just over 2,100. Sandy's got a data set that reports about 62% pregnancy rates, and in our field data that we're busy editing right now, we're looking at about 63% on the five-day work. So lots of cow numbers and showing some very, very good pregnancy rates to timed AI. Let me then very quickly talk about a study that we did with John Rogers when John did his master's, and that is just showing a distribution in calving intervals or calving distribution. And so we're busy working on a three-day work, and this is essentially a summary of the first year. And this is a group of cows that half of the cows in each herd were exposed to the co-sync placeda, the seven-day co-sync placeda system, and half of the cows in that herd were not exposed to any time AI whatsoever. And then the day after we time AI'd, we inserted bulls were introduced to the cows, and all the cows were run together. And so what we look at, and this is what the calving intervals, and this is when cows calve relative to the start of the calving season, when the first calf was born here. The white bars are those cows that were exposed to timed AI, to the co-sync placeda. And the yellow bars here represent those cows that were not exposed to estrosynchronization or timed AI. And the yellow bars, you see the nice curve, that's exactly what you would expect to see. But the great thing about the timed AI and being exposed to estrosynchronization up front is pushing when your cows calve, they start to calve earlier. And when you look at this, in this group anyway, those cows that were exposed to timed AI, about 44% of those cows calved in the first 20 days versus those cows that were not exposed to timed AI calved, only about a quarter of those cows calved in the first 20 days of the breeding season. Here's a calving distribution of about 1,600 observations in that big multi-state study. And this is what calving distribution does when you synchronize those cows. You'll get a glut of calves born very around the time that you, you're expecting them. And then there's a period of time, a little bit of a lull, and then an increase again, another lull, and another peak, all about 21 days apart. And this has caused some consternation here, this little lull here. And I think it, what it has done is it's caused a lot of people to question whether the CoSync plus Eater or some of these very good synchronization systems, whether it is actually messing cows up, because there's this period of time where you don't have any cows calve. But when you look at this, that doesn't seem to be the case. The cows are just very synchronized. However, what has happened is several people have reported this to me, so I've started asking them to get data to me. And I've always been fairly skeptical of this, but what has happened now is that some people, a lot of veterinarians out there, are actually saying, well, don't use a cedar because it might mess up your subsequent heats. And so I actually asked this producer who thought that that had occurred, and I asked him to send me his calving data. And so he'd synchronized these cows with the CoSync plus cedar system, and the 7-day CoSync plus cedar system, 438 cows. And this is what happened. 57% of the cows that calved were calves from AI. And then the first 21 days, only 8% of cows calved. And then 21 to 42 days, the next 21 to 42 days later, 18% of the cows calved. And so his question was, why is this only 8% if those cows are synchronized? And so I started, this is something that is out in the industry. Folks are talking about the negative effects of some of these synchronization protocols. So I thought, well, I'm going to answer this question because I think it's important to try and dispel a myth that the synchronization system is messing cows up. So this past year, what we did is we went into a bunch of cows, and these are cows that we knew were cycling. We took blood samples. We knew every single cow was cycling. And we decided to synchronize them with the 7-day CoSync plus Cedar system. We synchronized them. The only thing we didn't do is we did not stick semen into those cows. We did everything else, and they all had heat watch attached to them. So these are cows that 21 days later, every single cow should come into heat within the next 21-day interval. And if the synchronization system was messing them up, well, then they won't come into heat in 21 days. Because it would do something to those cows. Well, take a look. This is exactly what happened. This is 21 days later when we should have expected those cows to come back into heat. As you would expect, we had a range, and Mike Smith talked about the range earlier today. Look at the range of when cows came back into heat, 17 to 25 days, just like you would expect, with a peak of 21 days. Overall, 97.5% of the cows that were exposed to this treatment came back into heat during that period within 25 days. And the average interval to estrus was 20.9. So exactly what you would expect. So I think we've pretty much dispelled this myth, but hopefully we can answer those questions. Now, the CoSync cedar systems don't mess up cows. Okay, they seem to work just fine. And so if you hear that, just tell them that it's incorrect. Okay. Again, a lot of what I talked about basically leads to the protocol sheets, which Sandy will be talking about next. But just make sure if you were trying to write down protocols, they are on the protocol sheets. So with that, I'd like to just acknowledge several people that have been involved in my program, lots of collaborators and co-authors, and then a lot of support from a lot of the different companies and several places that have provided us financial support. Certainly appreciate that. If you have any questions, feel free to contact me. I might or might not answer your email or call. Thanks.